Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Angela Alberti.
Okay. Hello, Ivy Podcast listeners. I am very excited for our guest interviewee today, Lori Camacho. Before we get started, I wanted to introduce myself, talk about what we feel the premise of today's show is going to be. And just as a friendly reminder, before we get into the interview with Lori, I'd like to remind our audience to please go ahead and review our podcast channel on iTunes. If you have a moment, just go ahead and make sure that you give us some feedback, give us some stars. This really helps Ivy Podcast as we look to build our presence into the podcast channels. But I am your host for today's show, Angela Alberti. I am a contingent workforce specialist, and I am interviewing Lori Camacho, who is, at least in Houston, very highly regarded career specialist and has devoted a lot of time and energy in her career in helping the unemployed population. Lori, please feel free to introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm happy to be here today. Thanks, Angela. Yeah, I've been working in Houston, and now through the pandemic, I'm now virtual, servicing people all over the world. And I have been doing that through outplacement for quite some time. But my background is in corporate training. So I've done a lot of in-house corporate workshops and worked with individuals. Like I said, I've done outplacement. And for the last almost 10 years, I've been involved with working with just one-on-one with the community of with job seekers of all different levels. So I really have interfaced with a lot of different challenges, from everything from the bread baker to the CFO, CEO of the company, and startups to Fortune 500s. So I really do have a lot of experience working with a wide variety of job seekers.
That's awesome, Lori. And we can't thank you enough for joining us today. We're very excited because I feel like this is something that, personally speaking, having managed so many different types of workforce professionals, I understand and can find a lot of passion to helping the unemployed. I feel like one of the greatest strategies that we can all do to bring together is putting people back to work, particularly after considering the pandemic and what that's done. You know, I don't think we've seen numbers like that where we reached almost 17% unemployment. It was just crazy to know that, you know, almost 20% in some localities had an unemployment rate that high. So we definitely are embarking upon what is hopefully a bounce back year. But as we look at, you know, as we start the interview, I'd love to get your feedback, because knowing that the majority of our listeners today come from an audience that held executive positions, leadership positions, are heads of talent and departments across a variety of different companies. And knowing that you speak to the job seeker, so you are that support system to them that gives them the advice on the application process and the emotional and intellectual toll that it sometimes takes to find that perfect position. What advice would you give, and just some general feedback that you think would really position a company as we are looking to, you know, in some cases, they're referring to this year as the great rehire, and knowing that there's a talent shortage out there, what are some of the recommendations that you would give to this audience so that they can streamline and more so make and improve upon their hiring processes?
So I think the first thing is just to, for all of us to admit to ourselves that we're not going to be going back into a market that's exactly how it was before we hit this pandemic. I think that's really, really important. The workers now have a lot of, like, it's like emotional toll on them. But a lot of the workers that I'm talking to now, I work with a lot of job seekers, but also a lot of people who are employed. And a lot of them have been working from home for the last year, and they're now being asked to come back into the office. And a lot of this common thread that I'm hearing are people saying, you know, I've changed so much in the last year, and I'm not ready to go back to how I was before the pandemic. And so I think that's a really important thing for employers to understand, is that this, you know, your employees have changed a lot. They've undergone a lot. A lot of them are still processing things. And although you may be ready to get back to business, they may not be ready yet. And obviously we can't always bend over backwards for our employees, but I do think that means that we need to be prepared to explore the idea of like flex office space, flex working. We need to be listening to the needs of our employees. And right now we have a really amazing opportunity to endear our employees through listening to these different things that they've discovered over the last year that are really important to them. And those things have changed and are now more in the forefront than they ever have been. So that would be the advice I would give, is take this opportunity to reconnect with your employees, reconnect with those that you're hiring as well in those interviews that you're having, to ask them, what do they value with their benefits, and begin finding ways to bake those into your policies.
It really is almost doing a refresh across everything, knowing that the mindset affected every single person at every single level. And I think that there's a lot of things that speak true to that. You know, we're coming out of the pandemic. Parents are exhausted. We have Generation Z now, who is going to be a big force in the workforce coming into the years ahead and really hold highly across a variety of different sectors, very different benefits and what they consider important benefits package from what we've typically seen, like the health insurance. Now, whenever you are looking at it from your perspective of the assistance you lend to the job seeker, what do you think are some of the top mistakes that companies make in their application process? And if you could just say, oh, just reconsider X, Y, and Z, what would some of those things be so that they can make that and facilitate that process in a lot easier of a fashion for the job seeker?
So for this one, Angela, definitely communication is key. So, you know, we were just talking a minute ago about we need to connect, reconnect with our this population. But I do think what's really important when it comes to hiring is the lack of communication that we have in the process. We are trying to infuse so much AI, so much automated machine learning into this space that we're forgetting that the people who are applying are actually just people. They're not computers. And they don't have a computer that's going to apply for jobs for them, right? Or to jobs for them. So I think that's a really important thing that employers can remember, is that if you want to attract top talent, then you need to be from the day one treating them like top talent, and mm-hmm. you need to be communicating with them. And some of these things are very simple, like for instance, letting them know what the hiring process is going to look like, letting them know if you're actively hiring or not, letting them know a little bit more about the team from day one, instead of bringing them in and then just expecting them to onboard through all of that. Mm-hmm. A lot of it's just, like I said, just that communication piece, even giving some feedback if you can through your legal process, giving them some feedback to say, hey, you know, we really liked your resume, but here's some reasons why we decided to go with a different candidate. Mm-hmm. I know that doesn't work for all situations and for all firms, and different companies of different size have different policies, but any way that we can infuse communication back into that process will help to increase the relationships that you build through the hiring process and hopefully increase your branding and your business long-term.
It's incredible what some feedback can actually do to at least push the person in the right direction. Now, you touched on something that I wanted to expand on, and that's AI and machine learning. A lot of, you know, you hear this concept of future of work and where the future of work is going, and artificial intelligence and automated processing and parsing through these resumes. I want to hear your two cents, and we have full disclosure to keep it real, quote unquote. What are some of the pros? But more so, what are some of the cons that you see in implementing such a practice, besides the exorbitant investment it would take to actually apply that technology?
So this is a really tough conversation piece right now, Angela. There are a lot of really anticipated pros. The idea that you can, you know, with AI, map out what your organization should look like to have the best efficiency is very, very attractive, right? You no longer have to worry about all this maybe dead space or dead energy or dead pay that you're spending on your teams. If you can have a robot help you to automate what the personality should be like, what the diversity should look like, and everything like that. but we are not there yet. And honestly, I don't know or hope that we will ever be there, because one of the things that is holding us back with the greatest, the greatest thing holding us back is the fact that a lot of companies don't have a developed internal HR structure and organizational structure that's analyzing their positions and really understanding what's needed for those roles with a non-biased view. Mm-hmm. And until we can really do that internal work, our hiring will continue to be behind the lag. So as great as these, all these new AI tools are, they're only going to be as effective as your internal investment to your already existing employees and your already existing teams. And as we do move into a better and hopefully more robust mapping of organizational structure, what our hope would be is that we would also build in there some room for variance or some room for understanding that we are not always going to be perfect. So for instance, not all ENSTJs are the same, right? And understanding that there's complexity behind what those AI tools are meant to test for. So I think that's really important. And one last thing I want to say with this piece is that if we haven't learned anything else from this pandemic, I would hope that we would learn how important the organizational structure is. Because like you said, this is like the great hiring, right? The season of great hiring and the largest turnover we've ever seen of mobility and change. And one of the things I would hope companies would take away from this on a top level is how important it is to map out their organization to understand what roles are needed and what skills are needed for those roles. So that way they can turn over quickly and they can be more lean and more efficient in their hiring.
Oh, that's pretty fantastic. I think that was some great advice in there. And I want to take it back to the job seeker now, because you've gone through a variety of different hiring cycles and probably I can only imagine what your classroom or your virtual classrooms were like last year. But I think it's important for executives or perhaps people with tenure to understand the toll, the emotional toll that the job seeker goes through. Can you share some stories and can you share some of your own consulting advice that you give to the job seeker? Because it is an emotional toll. Like, you know, I've spoke to somebody that said that they've applied to 137 different places. And then it's just this black hole with no hope or any kind of direction of where they can go to. So I'd love to get your feedback on that.
Yeah. So 137, that's just the tip of the iceberg. It's not common to hear 300, 400, 500 or more, over 1,000 jobs that people have applied for. I do teach, like I said, I'm a corporate trainer and I do public workshops as well. And one of the public workshops that I teach every week, we do a survey. We actually ask the participants how long they've been in job search. And without fail, 50% or more every single week have been in job search over 6 months for sure. And the majority of that over a year, they've been in job search. Wow. So I think that's something really important to understand. And it's especially with this baby boomer population that are in this space where their quality of life is so good. They want to continue working, but they're also maybe, you know, hit their peak as some companies might think or say, as far as technology. But a lot of them have a lot to offer. So I think that's another really big piece to think here is that there's a lot of these baby boomers that are just continuing to search and they can be utilized in a lot of different capacities through contingent or contract or different types of hiring. So one of the tips, I guess I would say is again, to consider all the flexibility, not just of technology, but I love what you specialize in, Angela, and talking about the different ways that you can bring on individuals. And it's no longer full-time and part-time, right? There's all these different mismatches in between. And so that's one really important thing for both the employer and the employee is to think about, okay, what do I really need and how can I fill that? And how can I be flexible in my pay arrangement? Mm-hmm. I think some other things that I would think about too, especially when speaking to the employer, is to give that feedback, which I already discussed. I think that's really important because when you have applied to over 100 or 300 jobs with no feedback, there's no way for you to improve. So if you want to have, you know, it's kind of that, you know, if you give, you also get. If you want to have better talent to hire, then you can also give feedback and let that person become better in the pool. Does that make sense? So I think Absolutely. That process is really important. And then the last one, to job seekers, because you kind of asked on both sides, I would recommend that they really spend some time tracking what they do. Because when you apply to 137 jobs or more, it's really easy to think that you're just in a maze going around in circles. And until you begin to mark where it is that you are in that maze, you won't know if you've been there before or not. So I always really recommend to job seekers to, as much as they can, add data tracking and strategy into their job search to really help them like boost themselves forward.
Okay. So in a nutshell, I think it would be consider non-traditional working arrangements, particularly considering this rise that we see in flexible, maybe perhaps even third-party relationships that engage with large enterprise companies. It also sounds like ask for feedback. And maybe you're applying to organizations that don't give that. But if you are in the interview process, at least be, as for the applicant, be one to say, can you give me some feedback? I want to make sure that I'm going in the right direction. And also looking on the corporate side to see what they can do to more automate, automate that process a little bit better. And then lastly, organization. And I think that's probably if I was, you know, somebody that was in the job seeking market, I'd probably have the most trouble with that. I'm not a super organized person. Is there any tools that you would recommend for the job seeker to look at that aren't, you know, super expensive and could be more convenient for them in their process?
Yeah, it's really hard right now because everything is so scattered and fragmented. I was speaking with a top executive at a startup company, actually, and he was just, that was the word he used. The hiring process is fragmented. And so there's not really one tool. I really love Excel just because it's so basic and raw and you can do so many diverse things with it.
Right.
But I think that's really
great.
And it's cheap.
I mean, you probably already have it and you can go online and Google, you know, templates that download that onto your Excel. So yeah.
And you can use Google Slides if you don't have, Excel. And so I think that is one of the greatest tools. I think one of the hardest things when you come to tracking it is really identifying what do I need to track or what should I track? And I think that question is more important than the how do I track it? Because that may change and it will specifically change for different personality types, what you need to track and how you need to push yourself depending on where your energy comes from in your job search.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Makes sense. It sounds like the recurring theme behind our conversation is just to take a step back and do a lot of analyzation, whether that's internally through the corporate structure, through the HR organizational structure, through the own benefits and prioritizing or reprioritizing what has now become a major importance for your workforce, but also on the candidate side and just taking a look back and perhaps going outside of what has been traditional work models, finding out what areas you do want to track. It is all a matter of, I guess, self-analyzation. Mm-hmm. But one of the last things that I wanted to hit on as we wrap up today's show, and I actually posted a video on this on LinkedIn yesterday, which I thought was just such an alarming statistic. 1.5 million working mothers are still out. And if we look at the data behind how the unemployment rate has directly marginalized women at a greater percentage. I'd love to hear your feedback, just in general, what are your thoughts are on that and what we can do to engage and tap into this population so that we can be pivotal in bringing women mothers back to work.
Yeah. Definitely. This is an amazing population because so many have stepped out of the workforce, but they still have immense talent. And of course, this goes back to that same comments I was making about some baby boomers in the sense that you might want to consider as an employer some different types of arrangements, right? To bring that type of skill in with your pay. So like we talked about contingency or contract or different types of ways that you can engage this population. But I think another thing would be really critical in this space would be to engage with some firms or some companies that are helping to bridge that back, they call it returnship, that back to work experience. And so some that come to mind are like parent pivot is one of them. Mm-hmm. Also Social Mama helps to really empower this community. Pink Petro is a huge one in the energy space that's helping women in the engineering and oil and gas space, energy space.
The Mom Project is one that also comes mm-hmm. top of mind for me.
Yeah, the Mom Project. And what I think is so wonderful about these particular organizations and why I recommend possibly if you want to hire into this talent pool to work with them is because what they do is help the returner organize their skills and organize their thought. So when you partner with them and you get one of their clients, you're getting somebody who's going to be a little bit more prepped for returning back and for your ability to see what they have to offer. So I think they're really, really great programs. Right. Other than, so like I said, flexible pay arrangements, thinking about different types of opportunities that you can offer this population in order to tap mm-hmm. into their skills, working with one of these interim returnship or specialty type groups. And then the last one I would say is when you hire into this population, it's important to remember that they are going to value their flexibility and they're going to value their benefits more than anything else that you can offer mm-hmm. them, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of them are coming back to work because they feel this void in themselves. And so they have a lot of passion, a lot of drive. But if you overwork them, they will leave because mm-hmm. some of them will feel forced to find better arrangements for their family or for their situation. So mm-hmm. I think that's really important that you want to offer them some benefits and balance that with the other things that you have, but also be aware that you need to, again, communicate with this population when you bring them in because they can be your strongest employers. So many of them I've met work so hard to get hired because they really, really want it. But a lot of them really struggle with imposter syndrome and mm-hmm. feeling like because they took this pause, they don't have enough skills. And you have to be able to look past that as an employer and be able to offer them kind of like that carrot in front of them, but without overworking them, if that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost like restructuring the benefits program to an extent, but also living up to the mantra work-life balance and truly making that a core aspect, especially with that type of population where it's very valuable. And if they're feeling overworked at work, they're probably feeling overworked at home because what mom, quite frankly, is it? Mm-hmm. So very interesting tips. I love a lot of what you said. I really feel like we've had great conversation today. I'd love for the audience to know where they can get in contact with you. If you have any closing remarks, or final statements before we wrap up today's show, please share it with us.
Yeah. So I'm known, this has been a title given to me, but I'm known as the LinkedIn guru, the Houston LinkedIn guru. So one of the best places to connect with me is on LinkedIn, at LinkedIn, n/ Lori Camacho. I also do have my own website, loricamacho.com. I offer my own consulting. And like I said, I do corporate training, but also one-on-one coaching. So I love to connect with your audience through LinkedIn. I'm always on there starting discussions and joining into discussions. So I'd love to learn more about them and to hear their opinion on the hiring process as well.
Yeah, you guys have to connect with Lori on LinkedIn. It sounds like a talk show, but she is absolutely fantastic in sharing a lot of insight, data, feedback, things that she's going through throughout the day when it comes to the worker population and the applicant process and even through her corporate training. So highly recommend you guys get in touch with her that way. Lori, thank you so much for joining us today. I think you've given a lot of wonderful advice on the corporate side and on the applicant side that our audience can really look to engage in the future. And we'd like to thank everyone else for tuning in to today's show. Thank you guys so much. And we will catch y'all on the next episode.
Thank you, Angela.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.